Hey, Tom, do you realise it's nearly Christmas time? Come to think of it, we haven't even done a review for Halloween.
By golly gosh, you're right, Ben. Do you reckon we can fix that?
Oh, I don't know how we could.
Nevertheless, I have a plan. Follow me. Let's walk out of the living room and go up into the attic.
But are you sure?
I'm sure. Just trust me.
Okay.
So I haven't told you this, but somehow, somewhen, I got a TARDIS.
Somewhen? I haven't heard that expression before.
Well, I've just coined it now, but let's just go inside. I've got the key in my pocket, okay?
All right, let's go. Let's get in.
Okay. If I open the door, see, it's the TARDIS from Doctor Who.
Whoa!
Yeah, I know. It's great, isn't it? It's amazing. So let's pop in. When's November? Not November. October is Halloween. October 31st, 2016. And that way we get the podcast out on time.
Oh, perfect. For a change.
Okay. Do you want to pull the lever?
Yep, sure.
All right. Play the wave again. Oh, we're here.
Oh, thank God.
Open the door. This isn't our house, Ben.
No, it's definitely not our house.
This is like a chapel.
Where are we?
I don't know. Let me just check the readings on the scanner. Let me just go back inside. Oh, Struth, Ben.
What?
We're in 1976.
Ah, shit.
Do you know what that means we have to review?
The Omen?
That's right, Ben! The Omen from 1976! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 24 of What to Review, the show where we review anything and everything. I am your host, Tom Denham, and I'm joined by
Ben Holt. Hello, as always, everybody.
And today is a great day. We've jumped back in time to Halloween, a bit far too far this time, but it's just not a moment too soon because tonight we're going to review a cult horror classic.
The Omen.
For generations, the Thornes have been a family of tremendous wealth, position, and power. The perfect marriage of Ambassador Robert Thorne and his wife Catherine was fulfilled by the birth of their son, Damien. And then, when the child was 5 years old, something terrible happened. And then it happened again. Was it an accident? Was it murder? Was it a coincidence? Or was it an omen?
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
20th Century Fox presents a film of psychological suspense about an occurrence of earth-shaking importance. Gregory Peck, Lee Remick, The Omen.
I was at the hospital, Mr. Thorne, the night your son was born. I saw its mother.
I have fears.
What kind of fears?
Its mother, Mr. Thorne.
You saw my wife.
Its mother.
What is it you're trying to say?
His mother was a...
This is not a human child. Make no mistake.
There are those who will die for him. There are those who will kill for him. Who is he? What does he want? Where did he come from? And can he be stopped? Gregory Peck, Lee Remick, The Omen. If this is the truth, where does it end?
Yes, it is The Omen from 1976, which I very much look forward to discussing in great detail with you, Tom, as we always like to do. Mm. But I've got something on my chest, so can I get it off my chest quickly?
Absolutely. Just brush it off.
Yeah, let's go. So before this review, I've just come back from the cinemas. I was lucky enough to get hooked up with some free tickets. Thank you, Lloyd. Shout out to Lloyd. And I caught with about seven other people Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, Tom, which just so happened to be launch day. Like, I'm not even the biggest of Star Wars fans. I do enjoy it every
now
and then.
I'm quite a casual fan myself.
Yeah. I think casual is probably the right word to use. And I left the cinemas feeling very empty.
Really?
With this outing. I wasn't sure about it. I don't know. Maybe I have to watch it again. Maybe I'll... When it was playing, I'm thinking, perhaps I'm just not in the mood for Star Wars tonight. And then when it finished, everyone was like, wow, that was really average. And I was like, yeah, it was kind of bad, wasn't it? So I'm not knocking any of the cast. I'm not knocking Felicity Jones, anyone else in the film.
Mm.
It just wasn't my cup of tea. It wasn't what I wanted. And believe it or not, I'll put my hand up and say I enjoyed The Force Awakens from last year.
Still haven't seen it. We need to watch it.
Yeah, we should review it. But yeah. So, you know, obviously my Star Wars opinion shouldn't mean too much.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This story is a prequel to Episode 4, yes?
Yes, that is correct.
So it goes between 3 and 4.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, I just wanted to clear that.
And to me, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but to me, the film ended and I'm like, did this even need to be made? It just felt like a cash grab from Disney.
Yeah, I think that's what technically spin-offs necessarily do. Some spin-offs succeed. I am yet to judge this one, but nevertheless, I look forward to seeing it, whether it is good or bad.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if you could at some stage see it. I'm not going to rush you out to watch it, but eventually,
yeah,
see what you think. Perhaps you'll enjoy this more than I did.
And I think on that note as well, often things that I'm a bit misguided with, I've always found on the second viewing, sometimes it gets that little bit better. I'm not so sure if this is the same kettle fish, but
I could probably see myself enjoying this more the second watch, but
yeah, and
I just don't feel compelled like I would ever need to watch it again. That was my issue.
Yeah, sure. And with that as well, it does take time. You need to kind of step away from it for a little while and then come back to it with fresh eyes again.
That's right, but by the time you come back to it with fresh eyes, there's already a new one out. Like, now that they're pumping them out every single year now, it's just crazy.
I know, it's absolutely ridiculous.
But with that said, I am looking forward to Episode 8, weirdly, after seeing this film that really left me feeling a bit empty. Episode 8, I think, will be quite okay, so we'll see
how we go. Yeah, likewise.
But we are moving on here today. Not really, we're not moving on, we're actually going back in time. It's all about 1976. And we're reviewing a horror film, first time ever on the show.
Fantastic.
It's all about The Omen. Very, very exciting stuff, Tom.
Very much so.
So whose pick was this? I was trying to remember. I think you picked this, didn't you?
I think this was your pick, Ben, because last week I picked The Castle. And I remember asking you, what do you want to review next? And you were saying you wanted to do horror. And we were trying to think of something that we could both gauge with, and The Omen was just the perfect choice. And you said,
that is correct.
No, because I hadn't seen this film. I've heard much about it, but I haven't seen it before we talked about it on this show. So it seemed like the perfect opportunity to go and watch it. And I'm very glad I did.
And I'm very excited to get your thoughts on this, Tom, because prior to recording this, I've not heard from you whatsoever in regards to how you received this film.
Yeah, so I've kept it under wraps.
That is awesome. So, yes, we are reviewing The Omen, starring Gregory Peck, just an amazing actor in himself. But, you know, we have to get to the plot at some point here, Tom. And, Tom, can you stall while I find the plot on IMDb, please?
Yeah, sure.
Sorry about that.
It's all good.
You might have to look for that to edit out.
Too easy.
All right, perfect. We ready to go?
Yep.
So here's the plot for The Omen from 1976. Mysterious deaths surround an American ambassador. Could the child that he is raising actually be the Antichrist? The devil's own son? And that's the end of the plot, Tom. It was pretty simple to read.
Yeah, it's straight to the point. It's great.
I don't know if it's me. Anytime I look at horror films, I always like to read the title in three or four different voices. So immediately I'll go, The Omen. And then I'll go, The Omen. And then I'll go, The Omen. You know, something really demonic and silly.
yeah, I do that a bit myself as well, just in my spare time.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you just come home from a hard day's work.
I'm just on the train, and every now and again, I just look around to everybody and then stare at the guy next to me just in the eye and just say, The Omen.
The Omen.
And he just looks at me absolutely shocked and then runs away. I don't know why, but he does.
If there's one thing that I can really praise about this film, it's the fact that you get invested in what's going on very, very quickly. And I think a strong part of this is actually to do with that film score. It's very intense, isn't it?
It is. From those title credits with that orchestral choir singing, I was like, yeah, I love this music already.
Oh, yeah, it's just epic stuff. The cast, as we mentioned, is very, very good. Gregory Peck does a stunning job playing the ambassador.
And
one of the things I immediately love is how his life is slowly going downhill. Everything's getting worse. Every single minute this film goes by, the stakes rise. Everyone starts... Everything goes into absolute freaking chaos.
I know.
It's a lot of fun to watch.
That's another thing to praise about this film, is that the pacing is spot on. Nothing is rushed. It takes its time. But at the same time, it doesn't overdo it.
Yeah, the film clocks in at about an hour and 50 minutes. And I got to mention this too, Tom. Neither of us own this on disc. And I said, well, crap, how am I going to get a copy of this? Because I like discs or whatever. Mm. And you linked me to a high-quality YouTube video, and I went, oh, yeah, that'll be some crappy copy. It was absolutely beautiful.
HD. It was spot on. Yeah, you really saw those rich 70s colours in it as well.
Oh, yeah, they were full-on enforced, but I was just shocked that YouTube would actually allow this whole film to be on there. So if anyone wants to watch it, you can go on YouTube. You know, I don't recommend piracy, but at the same time,
I'll definitely buy this on DVD in the future for sure.
At the same time though, like if it's on YouTube, it's probably okay, right? Or who knows.
But well, it is free to view, so
yeah, that's right.
And we're not possessing it either.
Now, we have to mention this right out of the gate. For Tom, you know, I figured it was horror, but then I'm like, well, actually, he's going to like some of the people who appear in this. So Tom, if you want to take us through some of the familiar faces that you saw in this movie.
So in this movie, we have not one, well, technically, we have one, but we have two pretty well names in the Doctor Who universe. First of all, we have Patrick Troughton as Father Brennan, the priest.
Who, I have to say, might just have the performance of the film in this
really?
Movie. Really? I love him. He is so intense in this film. And it's funny, I've never actually seen an episode of his run, which is bizarre, seeing as how many Doctor Who's reviewed.
And obviously he's one of the best, Patrick by far.
Yeah, so here he just plays this... I mean, the priest isn't demonic. He's just going insane, isn't he? Like, he's seen something...
And I love this. And Pat does this so well.
Yeah, he really does. He's seen... He knows what's going to be happening, and he's trying to warn our lead protagonist, you know, you've got this child, it's going to kill you, it's going to kill everyone.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually dead, and oh man, it is easy, easy and scary.
If anything, the best death scene award has to go to Father Brennan, Patrick Troughton.
It's iconic.
That sequence, I've heard of this scene so often, but I actually haven't seen it until now, when he's walking or running through the cemetery, and there's this thunder and lightning storm going on, and then that massive spear impales him. It's just such an iconic scene in this movie.
It's unbelievable, but you know, the little bit before that is actually my favorite scene of the movie, where he says, meet me at this park or whatever. So he sits on the park bench.
Yeah.
And they have that really crazy spiritual discussion.
Yeah.
And Father Brennan pretty much tells Robert Thorne that, you know, your kid is actually dead. And what I love about it is he's like, you know, give me 5 minutes to explain. And then Robert afterwards goes, now you listen to me. I never want to see you again. And then, you know, he takes off.
Yeah.
And after that, it's as if the heavens just open up. You've got wind everywhere, trees are
it is shaking, chaotic.
And it's chaotic, and you're like, something's going on here. Someone's about to die. And Father Brennan gets impaled by a pole. Now, we should backtrack just a little bit here, Tom. Damien is obviously the son of the Thorns, and he's possessed by the devil. And right at the start of the film, he makes eye contact with this lady.
The governess. When I saw this, I have to say, I knew straight away what was going to happen. I just perceived it. I was like, she's got the devil inside her. She's passed it on from her to him.
I'm just curious, though, because did you see her hanging herself right at the start?
No.
I thought that was actually like a pretty brutal kind of execution. And she jumps off and friggin' smacks the windows. I didn't see the hanging
part coming. But when she made the eye contact thing, I was like, yep, this is what she's doing. And then she kills herself. I was like, oh, so the devil has decided to carry a new vessel.
Yeah.
But I didn't see that bit coming. But it was definitely, it set the tone for the rest of the film, I reckon.
Oh, it did. Yeah. And what a dark tone it was as well.
Yeah.
Now, I'll let it be known that I have actually viewed Damien Omen 2, which is, for whatever reason, what they called that film. So it's not the Omen 2, it's Damien Omen 2.
Mm.
And then I've even seen the third Omen movie, which is just bizarre. It's Omen 3, The Final Conflict.
Are they worth watching?
The second one, definitely, because it's really 80s and it's like insanely cheesy.
Yeah.
And it's also got some of the most comical deaths that you will ever see in any horror movie.
Awesome.
I'm going to put my hand up now and say that we're going to have to review it because it's just so ridiculously stupid.
Yeah.
And then Omen 3 Final Conflict's a bit different because it's actually really strange. Like, it goes into a really deep plot and he ends up, like, running the city or something like that. I can't remember because...
Damien
grows up and he's actually played by, I think, an Australian actor or a, might be New Zealand, but his name's Sam something. I just can't remember his name at the moment, but it will come to me. But yeah, that's a very weird watch, that film. And then there's also Omen 4 Awakening, which was actually a TV movie, kind of like a Doctor Who the movie type deal.
Yeah.
Where it's a pretty low budget, but people said it was really terrible.
So it's not worth viewing.
No, not that one. And that one's actually hard to trace down a copy.
It'd actually be interesting to actually see what they did with it. I'm always interested in these little nitpicky things, even though people hate them. There's always a niche number of people who really like that stuff.
I just heard that, yeah, it was very cringy. Just going back to what I was saying, Omen 3 is actually... Damien is played by Sam Neill, who... at one stage was considered to play James Bond after Sean Connery. So there you go.
Really?
There. Yep. Let's get back to this film. This film has this really dark tone to it that I just love, Tom.
Me too, yeah.
You never, ever get too comfortable with any scene. You always...
I was on the edge of my seat throughout the whole 2 hours.
Yeah, because you always felt like something wasn't right or something was going to change.
Yeah.
And... there's heaps and heaps of cool side characters here. I absolutely love the photographer who is...
Jennings.
Jennings. His job is just essentially to go around, just take some photos. But what's cool is that he brings all these photos back to his dark room, kind of puts them in the water. You got the neon red light, if you will. And when he checks out the photos, they actually have like this long mark going into the person as if it's referencing the fact that they're going to die. I think the first one looks a little bit like a noose, and then the ones after are more of like a dark pole. But it's kind of bone-chilling stuff, isn't it?
It is. It's definitely where it gets climactic. Now, I have to jump in here. I think Jennings, played by David Warner, was the sellout performance for me. I really liked Warner's representation of this character. Now, I say David Warner is a really interesting actor to watch in this because I'm used to hearing an older version of David Warner through Big Finish Audios. You might not know, but he plays an alternate version of an early Doctor in an alternative universe.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, I knew that you were familiar with the name, but I've only ever seen him here.
Yeah.
And it was actually a pretty young David Warner as well.
Yeah, and that was the interesting part for me. He's in a story called Sympathy for the Devil, where it's him as the Doctor and Mark Gatiss as the Master, which is hilarious and quite bone-chilling as well. And then he also cropped up in Series 7 in Cold War.
Oh, wow, there you go.
Yeah, he was the old dude there.
Oh, he has popped up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was really good here. I liked his character quite a lot.
Me too.
And what was funny is, like, why did he look so much like Patrick Troughton? Was it just me in this movie that kind of...
It must have been the hairdo.
I think it was that same kind of dark hairdo. And the frowny
face, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so that was kind of interesting casting there.
Now, yeah, I have to say about Jennings as a character, I was enjoying the film all the way through, but I really started to grip onto it throughout the second half, as we'll allude more to it later, but when Robert and Jennings start to go on this journey towards Rome, I think that's where it gets really interesting.
That's going to be an interesting conversation, because it kind of felt like the film took a bit of a back step when they went to that sequence, so you and I are a little bit different in opinion there. But yeah, as we move along, there are becoming signs that Damien, there's just something not quite right with him. We get this really cool scene where he actually goes to the zoo with his mother.
Oh, and, I love this bit.
And all of a sudden, it's a bit of a stampede with all the animals. They're like trying to jump on the car and like trying to kill him. That was really bizarre, I thought.
Yeah.
And then we also have another scene where they go to the church. They're trying to get out of the car door and the kid just goes absolutely crazy and just won't stop screaming and crying.
Hitting them and he's just like saying, I don't want to go in here. Like he had fear embedded in him throughout this whole scene.
And you just see Robert, played by Gregory Peck, just looking absolutely just horrified at this whole ordeal.
He doesn't know what on earth's going on.
No, and then he just goes to the driver, drive, drive! You know, next minute he puts his foot down and away we go. So, yeah, that was pretty crazy stuff for the most part.
Mm.
But here's, you know, you want to know my favourite character?
Yes.
Well, I did say Troughton has a standout performance, but I think this character is just incredible. It's that maid who comes in to kind of supervise the kid.
Oh, the new governess.
Yes, the new governess. She is just creepy.
She's definitely... The minute she walked into that room, I'm like, there is something wrong with this character. I know it.
Oh, definitely. It's all over her face, I reckon.
Yeah.
And I love this, how she's always telling lies, you know, with Robert, and she's always constantly breaking these rules.
Yeah.
And that was one of my favourite parts of the film, and the dog that gets possessed at the start of the film.
Yeah, the Rottweiler.
The Rottweiler actually comes back and he's at the door of the kid, and that was just wicked stuff. I thought she played an excellent role here.
Yeah, me too. And it was very... There were a lot of moments where there weren't any bits of dialogue, but just the interaction between her and Damien, where like shows just her eyes or like the corner of her face, you can see she's at work and Damien's at work as well, and then something happens.
Yeah, that's right. You kind of just know that things change. Tom, if we want to talk about editing, a scene that I think was just done masterfully is actually when Damien gets on his little push bike type thing.
His tricycle, yeah.
Yeah, he's on his tricycle and his mother's actually trying to grab something. I can't remember what she was doing. She was trying to grab a pot and she's on like a little stepladder or something.
This scene, yeah.
So anyway, you know, he's constantly riding the tricycle and it's getting closer and closer. It's a typical horror movie type deal. He's going in a circle and the next minute he hits her and she actually falls over the steps, but she's kind of holding on to the railing. She's
got this glass in her face as well.
Yeah, she's holding on to the railing in the balcony, and then the next minute, bang, hits the floor, and then she's in hospital.
Yeah.
This was awesome. I absolutely loved that scene.
Me too. I especially loved in this sequence the constant cutting between Damien and the governess, and it showed her eyes.
Yeah, very, 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 a lot of close-ups here, especially. I mean, eyes are always where the emotion comes from, so that bang, right on the eyeballs, Tom.
Now, this may just be me, but as I was watching this sequence particularly, I started to think whether this will be one of Stephen Moffat's favourite films, because I definitely see a lot of inspiration for where he may have got the idea of Missy.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I can see some qualities there for sure.
It may just be me reading way too deep into it, but I could just see him maybe thinking that as he's like reflecting his own favourite things.
I guess you'd have to ask Mr. Moffat if you ever meet him.
Possibly, yes.
So we move along in this film a little bit further. Another awesome thing is when Robert Thorne's, he's kind of on his own. And do you remember he gets in the limo?
Yes.
And he drives, and then, holy crap, he, like, sees the priest.
Yeah.
We're just backtracking there, but that was just another epic moment that I had to mention.
It was great.
It's just cool stuff. Yeah, one thing I got to say about this film, as soon as you start watching it, you just get this really eerie vibe.
And especially, you get hooked as well.
Yeah, especially at the start when, you know, the baby's just been born. You got, like, this really creepy kind of priest.
Yeah.
Who's just, you know, talking to him, and you just feel really unsettled.
This was one of my favourite scenes for choice of where they filmed, the camera composition. I love the scene, or just the bit of film where Robert is looking into the room where Damien has been born, and you can see the reflection of both of Robert and the priest looking into this room. It's really cool because you can see him looking in, but you can see this reflection of, like, this disdained look on his face. He's not too sure what's happening.
Yes, that was awesome.
I thought that was really clever.
Yeah, there's just a lot to love in this film. Another key scene is obviously when his wife, I mean, the big spoiler here, his wife actually gets killed in violent fashion too. She freaking gets thrown out of the hospital building.
I loved this scene because I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, nor did I. I was kind of surprised they did it, to be honest. It did shock me in more ways than one.
And it shocked me that it was the governess as well.
Yes, that's right. That was the big twist. Found out that it was her. It was just awesome stuff.
Yeah.
So let's get to that second half of the movie, Tom. You were just mentioning it before. So Jennings contacts Robert out of the blue, and he's noticed with his findings, all his photography, that, hang on, this isn't adding up. There's always these lines through people, and then these people end up dying. So they make contact. And I got to say, if we're talking art direction here, when they actually go to the church, you know that room and it's filled with all the pages of the Bible?
Yeah.
That's my favourite, like, location of the whole film. I think that looks so creepy and so epic.
I love it as well. There's definitely an undertone of insanity in that room.
Oh, yeah. It's like this guy's gone mad. he's just lost his mind. So, no, it was pretty epic stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, what was your thoughts further on?
Now, I knew just from this point that Jennings had a purpose in the earlier part of the film. He was there from the birthday party. He saw everything and he was taking photos constantly. And I really like that they kind of let him go a little bit and then they brought him back. Like, the audience didn't forget about him, but he was kind of put back to the shadows, if you like. Then they brought him back. And he starts to play his more significant role. And I really, really, really like his partnering with Jennings and Robert. I think the dynamic between them really works.
Yeah, definitely worked on screen. And as you said, you know, I didn't really think of it too much, but you're right. You kind of only see him in very sparing moments at the start of the film.
Like when he breaks his camera.
Yeah, that's right. And then second half, he's just, he's in it heaps. Yeah. So that is kind of a bit refreshing to see a film do that instead of you get introduced to this character and he's with us all the way.
If I could go back in time, I would love to see these two in a, I don't know, like a crime show of some kind. I reckon if they were in a TV series together, I reckon they'd just have a really awesome dynamic together.
I could definitely imagine it. Although, not that it could be continuing on from what we just watched.
No. It would definitely have to be a completely different show.
A separate entity. So, so I guess they have a bit of a chat and they work out, all right, we're going to work out whether your son's dead or not. So they go to like an old Roman Catholic church. Mm. And when they meet like the main priest, I just got flashbacks of watching The Assassin, did you, from Doctor Who? Oh,
yeah, The Deadly Assassin. Yeah. I can see where you get that, where the master's all shriveled up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what this old boy reminded me of here. And I remember he was trying to, like, draw out something, and then he died, and it was like, well, good.
For some reason, I kind of got flashbacks of The Dark Knight.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's interesting.
Where, I can't remember the character's name right now, but when he becomes Two-Face for the first time and you see skin has been charred off, it just reminded me of that for some reason, but I thought it was a very chilling scene on its own.
Yeah, what I really like about this film is they throw in enough new locations to keep it fresh and also keep it memorable. That's what I like in a lot of
films. If the location is constantly evolving, then I'm kept entertained.
Yeah, and that's what they did here. So we move along even further and we get to a cemetery, which is where they believe that Damien is buried. And oh my goodness, Tom, he was buried. He's dead.
Oh my goodness.
What were your thoughts when you discovered that Damien was actually dead?
To be honest, I didn't see it coming. I was kind of hoping that Damien was this possessed entity. I thought that would have been a really nice twist, but the film went this way. It didn't lessen anything for me, but it was definitely an interesting twist that took me by surprise.
One thing I just love is Gregory Peck does this look when he looks into the graveyard, looks down at the tomb and realizes, oh my God, it's my dead son. That look, Tom, should have won him an Emmy or something. That was
absolutely.
It was just so intense. It's one
of
those
parts of the film that's just absolutely gold.
Yes, I thought it was just insane. He was like, "Holy shit, he's dead!" and then it was a matter of him going, "All right, I know what to do." Like you could just tell he just changed. Yeah. Like his mind just ticked over and it changed, which leads into a very interesting conclusion to the movie. Mm. But the Rottweilers, you know, we have to have a bit of action here. So they end up coming for him, don't they?
They do.
Him and Jennings. So they go for a bit of a wild run. And that's another thing that this film does. There was a segment here where they try to jump over the fence. And was it meant to be, Tom, that part of that fence was meant to get lodged through his arm? Or was it just really poorly done? Because it looked like it was behind his jacket.
You'd have to ask a better man than me because I'm not too sure.
Did you think his arm was through that thing?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
It kind of gave that illusion.
Because also, if we're backtracking just about this really pointless nitpick that I have, Patrick Troughton's character, you know, when he gets impaled with the pole, the priest, it looks like the pole's behind him as well. It doesn't look like it's through him. So
yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just me having a whinge.
It worked, I reckon.
So we move a little further on and the findings just keep happening. We learn that there should be a 666 on his son somewhere.
Oh my goodness. And he was snipping away the hair.
Which we then realise, indeed, he was actually behind his hairline, which is an epic sequence. But Tom, did you see Jennings getting killed in like an absolutely gruesome fashion?
Oh, this is probably, yeah, one of the best deaths in the whole film, I reckon.
Yeah, this is a brutal death. So Jennings decides to backtrack, and I can't remember what he was doing. No, that's right. The reason they went to this new location was to be given tools to actually kill his son.
Yeah, they were getting the different stakes and knives and things.
That's right, because we're at a point now where Robert Thorne has said, he's the devil, I have to kill him, or there's going to be more danger to my family. And look, I think you'd change as a person if your wife just got murdered, you know?
Yeah.
So
it goes very Macbeth from here on in.
It does, yes. Yeah. I think that's a very
interesting juxtaposition of the two.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's definitely a good point. I didn't even think of that. But yeah, Macbeth is like, must kill everyone, rah, 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 rah. So here, the character of Jennings, he goes to walk down a little further to pick up the stakes, because I think Robert was still in two minds, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
So he kind of throws them away, and as the other guy, Jennings, goes to pick them up, we have this insane scene. And Tom, can you take us through this death scene?
Oh my goodness, I don't know where to start. So hold on, I just had a mental blank for some reason. So Robert is in, as you said, Robert's in two minds about this whole thing. He discards the daggers, and Jennings tries to retrieve them, but suddenly he is decapitated by a sheet of window glass sliding off a truck, and it goes through his neck, and he dies.
Yes, and we see this decapitation of his neck being severed off, I reckon, in about four or five different camera angles. Did you get a laugh out of that? It's like, we're going to do it, so we're just going to milk it like crazy, and they just keep showing it from different angles.
I thought I got a bit more of a gawp, if I'm honest. I kind of went, oh my goodness, this is brutal.
Yes, it was. It was full on. So who knew? Like, 1970s has still got some pretty cool special effects.
Yeah. Yeah. Kudos to a lot of films from this time. I think they're... Nowadays, there are films such as The Omen that are heralded as some of the greatest horror films of all time, but there are others that are kind of put under the blanket and are never spoken of again. So I really want to discover more of those films.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of really good horror gems back from the 70s and 80s that we need to get into.
And 60s as well.
Yeah, 60s has some good ones too.
There's a lot of great Hitchcock stuff.
Bit of Clockwork Orange as well, and yeah, there's just heaps of different bits and pieces. So.
Yeah.
So we are getting towards the end of the film now. So Robert drives back to his house in just crazy fashion. I mean, after all, another person's just died. You know, these deaths, Tom, they're just racking up, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So one by one, everybody is dying.
So he goes back to the house, cuts off his son's hair, finds the 666, and goes, "I have to do it. I have to kill him."
At this point, I was wondering, is he going to do it? Is he going to hesitate? Like, it's no easy thing to kill a child.
No, of course not.
And then, out of the shadows, the governess jumps out.
Oh my God. Talk about one of my favourite things. Talk about one of my favourite things of the movie. Holy crap.
This whole sequence was so intense.
She just came out of, like a bat out of hell. You know that Meatloaf track?
Yeah.
She came out like a bat out of hell, really, didn't she? And what did she have? She was holding like a meat cleaver or something like. No, it wasn't quite that. Something very sharp.
It was a big sharp thing that we saw in the dark.
Yes, yeah, so she's trying to strangle Gregory Peck. He's not having any of it.
No,
he's trying to throw her away. I will say she did go down pretty quickly.
She did, and I think there was a moment though where I could see the film turning here of her killing Robert and then raising Damien to become the next Satan.
But you know, I do wonder whether that was a thought process.
I could see it happening very easily.
Going through the writer's head, or even if they filmed a different take like that, I think that would have been very interesting to
imagine watch. Imagine if, like, the last scene that you see, like, the last sequence, you see Robert die, and then you see Damien enter, and she just smiles at him, and then the film ends. You could easily do that.
That would have been crazy. But I think this ending we got's even better. So he ends up killing the mistress in brutal fashion, like, holy crap.
Yeah.
This film is violent, Tom.
And she did not want to give up at all. She was going at it till the very end.
Yeah, she got stabbed and went, "Aah!" It's also interesting to note that this is the only time we ever see her with her hair down. I just thought that was like a really random thing to add.
Yeah.
And there's something about people fighting in pajamas that always makes me laugh too. so thumbs up for that. So he pretty much goes to grab Damien and he's taking him to a church. Do you know the significance of that?
I think because he is the Antichrist, he wants to kill him in a place that's surrounded by Christ, so he's protected by
Christ itself. By the Lord and all those good people.
And when he was driving at full pelt to this church, the police chase after him as well, and he goes in there and he's got the dagger, and I'm like, oh my goodness, he's going to do it. And I was like, so ready for it to happen. And yes, I almost thought it did.
Yes, that's right, because Tom almost thought it did. But what ends up happening is the cops end up shooting him dead. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very sorry to inform you about that. Yeah, we get this really bright white light.
It's a great sequence.
And for whatever reason, I almost thought, like, oh, they're going to heaven. Or, you know, something really, really strange.
I love that shot of the bullet coming out of the gun and then it just goes to white.
Yeah, it was like... Very, very
ethereal.
Very interesting how they ended this. My one complaint here, I just wanted to feel that tension for another 30, 40 seconds.
Yeah, me too.
Because I was right there with them when that was going on.
I would love to see, if I could go back in time and edit this film, I would love to see the bullet go into Robert and he just realizes, oh crap, I've lost. And then he just kind of slowly falls back down to the ground and then it goes to the funeral scene.
Yeah, because you never really get to see him react to it, do you? You just next minute it's like, oh, he's dead. We're at the funeral. So yeah, we get to the funeral at the end of this film. You know, because he was an ambassador after all. There's a lot of high up people here, a lot of important people in suits and military and all that kind of jazz.
Mm.
And it ends pretty simply. They mourn him, and we see Damien, and he looks at the camera. And you go, oh shit, he lives.
It is a sensational ending.
It's a great film, Tom. I had a lot of fun with it. You know, second watch, sometimes things aren't quite as you remember them, but this was. So I've actually seen this movie twice in a year now, which is very rare for me to do.
It's great stuff.
So yeah, overall, is there anything else we needed to cover about it?
Look, I think this is a stellar cast. Everybody... From Robert to Jennings to Father Brennan to Kathy, especially.
Kathy did a very good job too in the film.
I think she knew from the start that something was wrong. And I really like this undertone. From like when they came to the church and he was like, I don't want to go in. She knew something was wrong with Damien until the time that she fell off. That balcony inside the house, and then she was in hospital talking to Robert saying, oh, I don't want to be near that kid.
Yeah.
He just felt it from there.
It's quite amazing. Everything in this film just seems to work. And also, another really good thing we didn't touch on is the romance between Kathy and Robert. You really feel like these characters are in love with each other.
Yeah.
Which I think's why that when everything turns to complete shit,
yeah.
You do really... kind of feel bad for what's going on in the situation.
Now, there's a very interesting power struggle in this film that we did not touch on whatsoever, but I love how it was very brief, but there's this sequence where Kathy and Robert are talking and she says, I don't want to have any more kids. And he goes, okay. And then she says, so you're agreeing to my abortion.
And we're like, yes.
Oh.
Oh my God, yeah.
And I think this scene... And then the following scene with the doctor. I think this is wonderful.
Yeah, this was crazy good. And I always love how he's like, Kathy. throughout most of the sequences. And that's the other thing too. Like, Kathy has like bad depression in this film.
She does. And I think for that reason, she gets a lot of focus.
She does, which is why I find it even more puzzling that they just kill her off in like really full-on fashion. But... who am I to question this script?
I love the trauma that Robert goes through afterwards as well. Like, his wife has been killed. She's fallen out of a window and he's just beside himself. But that, he uses that as his rage to go against this devil thing.
All these bad events actually drive him to... You know, they make his motivation. All these deaths pretty much make the pathway for the narrative, don't they?
And I love that about this character as well. Robert's definitely a yeah, standout for this film.
Yeah, he's definitely not a bad guy, but, you know, his hand gets forced and he has to do what makes sense to him, even if that is kill his own son. But after all, his son was demonic.
Yes.
So you just never, ever know. That was our review of The Omen. I'm going to give it a 4-star. And Tom, what are you going to give this film?
I'm going to give it a 5-star.
A 5-star?
Yeah.
You're giving it a full-on 5-star, 10 out of 10.
I'm giving it a 5-star. I completely understand with everybody why this is a cult classic. I loved it from start to finish.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe this. So is it fair to say that this might be the best film I've ever recommended to you?
Probably, I reckon.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, sweet. I knew you'd like it. I just didn't think you'd like it that much.
Yes.
It's horror done right. And Tom, we need to watch The Omen 2 probably quicker than later.
Because
it is balls to the walls silly. unfortunately, the really serious tone of this film does get lost in the sequel to this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, William Holden's in it.
Fantastic.
And it's actually a very enjoyable watch. I really like Omen 2.
Now, this is an interesting conversation that we've had in previous podcasts where we talk about sequels. And I know we alluded to it in our review of The Castle, where we say some of the best films are best left alone. Now, I wonder, you have kind of made note of it, but you do wonder if some films are best left as they are without any sequels or any threes or fours or fives or whatever. But I'm really intrigued to see what they do with Damien Omen 2.
Yeah, I think you will like it more than I did, but I still would probably give that film about a 7. I think the over-the-top deaths are enough to give it a thumbs up. They're just so memorable and so funny. And for the most part, the performance is actually pretty good in that film. And it's got that same stellar soundtrack that you heard in this. So
oh, great.
That composer comes back. So yeah, it is...
Music was a big part of it.
Oh yeah, it made this film. But yeah, I just didn't think the second one really stood up to what we were given in this film. So that was our review of The Omen. Feel free to let us know what horror films you would like us to review on our Facebook page. We very much look forward to hearing you at What to Review, the review podcast. And also, please don't bash me too much on the Star Wars. I just didn't enjoy it. I really, really wanted to.
I could sense that because you talked it up quite a lot over the past couple of weeks when we've been in conversation.
Yeah, I was just
Rogue One's going to be awesome.
I was just, yeah, because, you know, the trailer made me think, yeah, it's going to be really cool, but I enjoyed
the trailer. That's the only thing I've seen about it.
You know, I'm not going to say I want my money back because I didn't pay a cent to watch it. I got very lucky that I scored a free ticket. Lloyd, you're a legend. I just felt like it was missing something. It did not have me excited. I was kind of just ready for it to end in the last half an hour. So who knows? Maybe I'll change my thoughts on it. But please don't bash me and go and see Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, because perhaps you'll enjoy it more than I did.
Star Wars is awesome in itself.
It is a fun type of series.
It's a fun franchise.
Yeah, so let me know what you think. And if you liked it, please let me know. That'd be awesome. So here we go. We are moving onwards and upwards, Tom. It's episode 25 coming up next week.
It is.
And it's our Christmas episode.
It is our Christmas episode. We have been going a little bit festive. This week we took a bit of a backtrack back to Halloween.
Yes, we missed our Halloween release, so yeah.
Next week we're going back to the Advent calendar. And we won't tell you what we're going to review yet, but keep your eyes peeled on the Facebook page. And you will find out there momentarily. And also in the next coming weeks, probably not immediately after, but at some point or another, we will review the return of Dr. Mysterio, the Christmas special for Doctor Who.
Yes, the Christmas special will be reviewed. I mean, after all, we didn't get a Series 11 this year, so we figured let's go all out and we will review that Christmas one. And it might be a little scathing because I'm just not a big fan of Christmas specials. So I'll try to just lighten up for that, I think.
I watched, I went back to back. I watched Last Christmas and The Husbands of River Song the other evening to kind of refresh myself on the Capaldi Christmas specials. And I feel like Last Christmas aside, they're not very Christmas surrounding. Like, sure, you have Santa in the background of Last Christmas, but there's actually a thicker story going on. Same with the Husbands of River Song. I feel like they could work as stories on their own, whereas a lot of the Matt Smith Christmas episodes feel very Christmas-centric.
Yeah, again, you know, I've said this before on the podcast. To me, it's like, it's Christmas time, we need a Doctor Who Christmas episode, and usually it never connects with anything else that goes on the show.
Yeah.
It just feels very self-contained and just a holiday episode. And do we need it? Nah, not really. I've
got two complaints about that. One, I completely loathe the idea. They were all right episodes, but I don't like that we've had not one, but two regenerations on Christmas stories, both David Tennant and Matt Smith. And the other thing is, we've only had one Halloween episode.
Yeah, that, I reckon step up the Halloween and back off the Christmas.
Yeah, the one and only Halloween episode we've had, The Waters of Mars, is fantastic.
Yeah, it just makes me think the UK must just love their Christmas.
Yeah, it's a big time of year for them.
So if you're listening to our podcast, we thank you so much. I mean, I guess you would be hearing us if you were listening.
You came this far, well done.
Yeah, we thank you again, and we wish you a happy Christmas. Hopefully you get some cool movies, or you just get some cool stuff, some cool gifts of any kind. You know, a pair of socks, lucky you. See how you go. But have a great Christmas, have a nice New Year's, and we will be back much more consistently week to week next year. So we thank you again for listening, wish you all the best, and we'll say goodbye from Tom and I, the Omen.
We hope you enjoyed it. It was a good film. We both enjoyed it, so definitely check it out if you haven't already. See you later.
Thanks, guys. We'll catch you.